From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. It's Wednesday, February 5th, and here are today's headlines. Vermont lawmakers are preparing to scrutinize hundreds of millions of dollars in COVID-era appropriations that may not be yielding adequate returns to taxpayers. Virgin's Representative Matt Byrong is the Democratic chair of the House Committee on Government Operations. He says the unprecedented amount of spending approved by lawmakers in recent years requires stricter oversight and accountability measures by the legislative branch.
And then we need to realize if they're being utilized in the way that the legislature intended, and if not, we reevaluate those appropriations and those functions.
Byrong says lawmakers may decide to revise or eliminate programs that are not achieving the legislature's intent. And he says that could free up money for other priorities in next year's state budget. Young Afghan refugees settling in the Brattleboro area will have access to academic tutoring, post-secondary planning, and other support. That's thanks to grant funding secured before recent changes to the U.S. Refugee Resettlement Program. Last month, President Trump paused the program and froze funds for groups that support refugees, including in Vermont. But Boys and Girls Club Executive Director Alyssa Hunt told the Brattleboro Reformer they had already banked grant funds from the Refugee Resettlement Office, which remain available to use. The funds are slated to run through this calendar year. In another federal decision impacting Vermont, the Trump administration has postponed its tariffs on Canadian exports for 30 days while the two sides work out a border deal. If the tariffs go into effect, Vermonters may see higher heating and gasoline costs this winter. It's not clear how long it would take to see an impact on your electric bill, but Dan Dolan, president of the New England Power Generators Association, says that's not the case for everything.
For heating oil, for gasoline for your car, for natural gas to heat your home, that's where I'm expecting a more direct and timely impact when these tariffs go into effect.
Irving Oil owns Canada's largest refinery and delivers fuel across New England. They say the tariffs would impact their customers as well as energy security and the wider economy. Vermont Gas Systems, Vermont's sole natural gas supplier, imports nearly all of its gas from Canada. A large share of Vermont's electricity comes from imported Canadian hydropower, and roughly 80% of New England's gasoline and diesel comes from Canada. This year, Vermont officials will begin planning for the future of the state's waste disposal. That's because Vermont's sole landfill in Coventry will reach its capacity in about 20 years. Tom Kennedy works for the Mount Escutney Regional Planning Commission, which helps manage two solid waste districts in the state. Yesterday, on Vermont Edition, he said opening a new landfill would be very expensive, costing millions of dollars just to get through the state's permitting process.
I think one of the things that is need to be done is we need it to be able to build a landfill. We're going to have to lower the risk so that people are going to have support with permitting and the like to be able to make this move forward.
Other options for waste disposal include waste to energy or burning trash, expanding the Coventry's landfill capacity, or shipping more waste out of state. And Senators Bernie Sanders and Peter Welch are opposing Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s nomination for health secretary. Despite that, Kennedy's nomination cleared the Senate Finance Committee on a party-line vote yesterday. Sanders said in a written statement he agrees with Kennedy on several issues, such as cutting back on ultra-processed foods and lowering prescription drug prices. But Sanders fears Kennedy could ultimately reduce public health protections. Welch, in his own statement, expressed concerns over Kennedy's character and his views on vaccines. Kennedy's nomination now goes to the full Senate. Coming up, Vermont doesn't track how many unhoused people die in the state. But a recent collaboration with 7Days has identified more than 80 deaths between 2021 and 2024. In the first of a three-part series, we hear the story of a Morristown man who passed away last spring after being unable to qualify for the state's motel voucher program. That's after this. Homeless Vermonters face many deadly risks, but the state does not track how many have died or what kills them. A first-of-its-kind analysis by Vermont Public and 7Days identified at least 82 people who died either living outside or sheltered in motels between 2021 and 2024. The majority of the deaths were drug overdoses. Several people were hit by cars or died prematurely from health conditions exacerbated by their existences on the edge. Many of those deaths happened in largely invisible ways, in tents, sheds, motel rooms, and dumpsters. This week, we're bringing you three of their stories. In this first installment, Vermont Public's Liam Elder Connors reports on a longtime Morristown local.
Morristown Police Chief Jason Luno got a call around 9 p.m. on a night last April. There was a body in a shed next to a softball field. The shed was near some businesses, too, including a mobile home manufacturing company.
I mean, it wasn't really hidden. It was probably 60 yards off the driveway down into those to the businesses that I mentioned.
It was a small shed, about 10 feet by 15 feet. There was a mattress pad and some food inside. Luno recognized the dead man who appeared to be living there.
I mean, Michael, he was a local. He's been in our community, I believe, most of his life.
Luno had just seen Michael Malin the day before. Malin had walked by while Luno was arresting a woman during a traffic stop. There was a dog in the car, and Malin offered to walk it to a family member in town.
And he actually took his belt off his pants and used it as the leash for the dog. And he took the dog because the vehicle was going to get towed.
Malin, who was 45, struggled with drugs and alcohol. He'd been in and out of prison for decades. His most recent stint had been for a month in 2022 after he absconded from parole. Shortly before that, he'd spent more than a year incarcerated after pleading guilty to aggravated domestic assault.
He was just, you know, he was fighting a substance abuse problem. He was unhoused.
Luno found a note in Malin's pocket addressed to his parole officer. He'd written it to prove that he'd tried to check in a few days earlier that week. Malin wrote that he hadn't been accepted into the state's emergency motel housing program.
I had only fallen into the adverse weather category, apparently, as if I don't need help getting a roof over my head with some sort of permanence in mind.
Malin continued.
The system is severely broken and not designed for successful reintegration of an inmate back into a successful way of life.
Luno says he found himself agreeing with Malin that our system often sets people up to fail.
You know, here is a guy that had a pretty bad substance abuse problem, was on probation, and, you know, living in a shed.
The medical examiner determined that Malin died from a drug overdose, and he wasn't the only unsheltered person in Morrisville who died that way last year. Tony Tuthill, another local, also overdosed in a shed. For Luno, these deaths point to a need for more drug treatment facilities.
And from what I believe and what I've heard from people is if they could go to a treatment, receive, you know, 2 weeks of treatment, 3 weeks of treatment, and then be placed into some type of sober living, that's what's going to help them turn the corner.
Luno says the Lamoille County town of 5,400 is also seeing more people sleeping outside or in cars. The police department even hired an embedded mental health specialist recently.
And I feel that she spends, you know, almost half of her time trying to work with folks in our community that are unhoused and, you know, especially with the cold weather lately.
Luno says there's at least 5 people unsheltered in Morrisville. And for a small rural town, that feels like a lot. For Vermont Public, I'm Liam Elder Connors.
This story was co-reported by 7 Days staff writer Derek Brower. You can read the story at vermontpublic.org, at 7daysvt.com, or in this week's print edition of 7 Days. Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Peter Hirschfeld, Jen Jarecki, the New England News Collaborative, Michaela Lafrac, and Adia Golston. Our executive producer is Kevin Trevelin, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. Talk to you tomorrow.